we are innately wired to be in the caveman brain, which is our limbic brain. And that's the lower left and lower right. So we are wired to flee from threats, whether or not they are real or perceived. And that's our very first nature, is to get comfortable as quickly as we possibly can. So when we developed our upper brain, that more complex brain of the upper right and the upper left, that's when we started being able to step back and problem solve much more complex situations. So when you stop and use those areas of your brain, that's when emotional intelligence can really start to be developed.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
What is the one thing that 90% of all high performers take time to develop? It's emotional intelligence. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. And if you're not sure what that is, so just hang on, you're about to find out. But first, I want to welcome everybody to the show. And of course, I'm coming to you from the America Out Loud Network. This is The Misdiagnosed Life, and I'm your host, Beverly Butler. And again, we've got some new listeners. I want to welcome you. We're on lots of podcast sites, and we've just recently added Talk Radio. We're on networks like TuneIn, AHA Radio, Radio Guide, iTunes Radio, and Shoutcast, to name a few. So I want to welcome you all and thank you for listening. Now, my guest today says, in order to reach the higher levels of success, you have to have this one thing in your life. And as I've just said, that one thing is emotional intelligence. Now, Kathy Schisler helps people go from stuck to unstoppable in achieving professional success and performing at their personal best. And her website is destinationbreakthrough.com. Now, Kathy, you talk about grace under fire on your website. Is this what emotional intelligence is, or what is it? First of all, tell us what grace under fire is, what you're talking about.
Grace under fire is a kind of a common term that people sit back and think about. Have I seen people who have grace when times are tough and the stress is on and there is chaos organized around other or otherwise? So it's kind of a catchphrase. But when you dig a little deeper, grace under fire is what emotional intelligence looks like when people are actually using their emotional intelligence.
Okay.
So to give you an actual definition, let me back up just a little bit. Emotional intelligence started rearing its head back in around 1995 when Time Magazine published a big article, What's Your EQ? And they published a study that was done by Harvard that talked about how 70% of those people who were hired for their IQ, for on-the-job performance, less well in their performance reviews than people who had a different quality. So they started to study what in the heck was this actual quality where the average person with maybe a middle-of-the-road IQ was outperforming those with high levels of IQ. And what they found was it had to do with how people were aware of how they were acting, managed themselves and their options for behaving, how they were able to actually read their social environment and then build constructive and performing relationships with those around them. So they came out with this actual definition. I'll share with you Peter Slovany and John Meyer from 1990 say that emotional intelligence is the subset of social intelligence that involves the ability to monitor one's own and others' feelings and emotions, to discriminate among them, and to use this information to guide one's thinking and actions. So it's a whole lot of words. Grace under fire is a nice umbrella that people can probably relate to a little better.
Yeah, that does. It sounds that sounds very, very interesting. So basically, emotional intelligence is when you're in tough situations, it's having self-awareness and being able to control your emotions, even when you're, so to speak, in the fire, in the frying pan, when things are really, really bad, you can keep yourself under control and still think of the other person and be logical and sensible, even when, you know, things are, you know, pretty, when everybody else is emotional, you keep your emotions intact, basically.
Yeah, that's right. It has a lot to do with your coping skills and options and choice, kind of being in control instead of constantly just reacting. And then in hindsight, 2020, saying, man, I shouldn't have done that, or I should have done this. So, yes, it is all about self-awareness and self-management.
Yeah,
and
self-control.
In times of stress.
Yeah. And that makes sense, though, that people that are more successful, because when they're negotiating, say, big contracts and whatnot, if things are not going their way, people with emotional intelligence can kindly pull back and stay in control. And you can think they keep their sense about them, and they can think about how would be, you know, logically. They can still think logically. If you're reacting a lot of times, you throw logic to the back seat a lot of times because you're reacting out of emotions. And so, okay, so this is very interesting. That would make sense why people with emotional intelligence are more successful, because they can keep their head about them even when things aren't going their way and look at things logically and have a better and negotiate better. And also, when you're keeping yourself under control, people you're negotiating with will also, you know, it'll help keep them more calm so that you can come to a logical negotiation that's fair for everybody. Is that?
I would agree with that. Yeah. So whether you're talking about negotiating in a very traditional sense, if you're in sales, then being able to keep yourself objective and instill in your environment a positive and constructive demeanor, it's going to set the people around you with a better level of feeling warm about you. Now, the other side of that is, if we're talking negotiation in terms of trying to even influence your environment, whether you're trying to influence a peer member, maybe somebody from an outside department, your boss, take it into the home. If you're trying to influence your spouse or your children, when you enact social awareness, and you can see what's happening with the people across the table from you or at the table with you, you can start to see, how am I influencing this? And maybe there's a better way for me to start acting in order for us to get to that common outcome, or at least the best outcome for this situation.
Yeah, the best negotiations occur when people are using emotional intelligence.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop, and also get the app. You go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
Give us a real-life example, say one for business and one for the home, of each, one with emotional intelligence and one without. I think
okay.
That would be interesting.
Oh, yes, this is fun. So we're going to start with the fun one, and we're going to start in home, and then I'll give you a couple, actually, for business. There's a great, great speaker out there in the world by the name of Mark Gunger. And he does all of these workshops on how men think in boxes and women think in networked wiring all over their head. And so it has to do with in the home, for instance. I'll be personal for just a moment. When my spouse, for instance, will start to click away at those pet peeves, and whether it's socks on the floor or hair around the sink, and while it's true that there's been conversation around, if I've just cleaned everything, and he goes and he shaves his face, The next thing I know, I look and there's all the shavings all over the place. It has to stop and say, okay, I can go, because I can take him for granted. It's so easy to not display emotional intelligence with people you're even closer with, because you feel more comfortable to just let things be blurted out of your mouth.
Right. And those are the most important.
Those are the most. That's right. Yeah. So for people that you're actually closer with, you may demonstrate even less emotional intelligence because you take it for granted, or they should know by now. So it takes a conscious effort to see something and then say, hold on, do I want to nag right now? That's an option. I can go forward. Do I want to feel respected right now? What's the real agenda that I'm after? So if I stop and recognize, wow, I just got hooked by the hair on the sink. What am I after? I'm after feeling loved and respected and heard. So chances are that hair around the sink or socks on the floor is just part of a discussion to have with my husband around feeling respected, heard, and paid attention to. I'll focus my conversation more there than on the nitpicky details that eventually could show up in a blow-up.
Okay, so now, you're focusing more on your feelings and trying to explain to him how that makes you feel when he does that.
Sure. Instead of the nagging of the actual detail of that moment, you need to raise it up higher. Now, if I don't have emotional intelligence and I'm not using a higher level thinking, I'm just going to, again, blurt out whatever comes out of my mouth in reaction to what's happening right then and there. Yeah. I won't stop. I won't think. And then I won't make a different choice for the betterment of that relationship.
Yeah, that's so easy. Yeah, that's so easy to do with spouses.
It is. Yeah, well, spouses, people you sit next to every single day and work with every day, it really is a conscious decision to stop, think, and then look at your options for what's really going to get you to what you want. Now, let me take it into business. And when I've worked with clients in the past, I've had people who come across a subject in their business that feels, they feel insufficient. Let's take intelligence. Some people, their experience with math in elementary school, in high school, and or in college wasn't one that was supportive. It didn't build them up. It didn't create a better fire inside them with self-esteem and confidence. So now that they have their business, anything that comes up with the word budget next to it, they may shy away from. They may mismanage their money because they don't like to pay attention to it. So we have two reactions. We have the flight and the fight response, right? Stress.
Right.
For people that are in the flight response, I see that when their emotional intelligence is low, they will not go and just make the learning around accounting and finance. It's just a subject. It's not a condemnation for how they're lacking. But if they don't have a high level of emotional intelligence, it's 100% about their identity of being maybe less intelligent when it comes to math and numbers. So I'll work with them on who you are and what the task is, so we can separate those things out. And I do have this one client where we talked about the money side of the business. And once they were able to separate who I am from what I need to learn, without it meaning that they were lesser or stupid, they were able to go and have these financial conversations with a much higher level of self-esteem and confidence, which was them showing grace under fire. Another example is our people who needed to request money for their capital for funding. And they weren't necessarily the extroverted people that give sales presentations all the time. When we go back into our heads and we think back to, wow, when did I become insecure, or how did I become insecure about a particular skill that now I need to use in my life? A lot of times it has to do with some consequence, some discipline, or some pain. And they get stuck emotionally in how they felt at that time, but that emotion carries through with the situations they face today. So they'll either attack it and be micromanagers about it, or they'll try and flee and not have to go through with that. So if they're micromanaging or overattacking, chances are their business or their professional life is suffering in that area because of that story.
Okay. Okay. Now, it seems that people with emotional intelligence are just people with more emotional maturity and who live more from intention instead of reaction. They're more in control of their life and their emotions.
I would say that's true, because it is a skill, so it can be developed. And if people have low levels of emotional intelligence, then when they consciously make an effort and decisions to act in that different thinking, then yes, it's a skill that gets developed. They're much more intentional, and they see better results.
Yeah. So now, this Kathy, you help people develop their emotional intelligence. Now, you know, before we get into, you said there's four areas that you test people, I mean, that you work with them in. There's four areas of emotional intelligence. So, but you test people first to see where they are. What test do you give them, and what does it reveal? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, let me go ahead and help people be relieved of their testing. We take assessments, which are indicators that they can't fail.
Okay, well, that's
so
good.
All of your listeners out there that have test anxiety, don't worry, you can't fail this.
Okay, that's
so
good.
What I do is I have them take an assessment called the CORE Multi-Awareness Profile. And it's a personality style indicator, but it is a multifaceted assessment. It goes a few layers deeper with a few additional perspectives than you would find with a Myers-Briggs or with a DISC, which are the other two leading assessments out in the marketplace today. Now, what happens here is in this assessment, people are going to see what they think they are, and they're also going to see what they think the world would say about them. But the magic is in the part three of the assessment. And in part three, I get to see how they transition through four core trait sets when there's no stress, when there's some stress, and when there's a lot of stress. So it gives me a snapshot of how this person is coping in their average every day and exactly what areas of traits set them off to be able to actually use emotional intelligence, or it will show me where they have areas of opportunity to develop their emotional intelligence.
Okay, now I want to ask this. Does everybody have to just learn this? I know everybody can improve on it, but do some people just kind of automatically have this, or does it always have to be developed in people?
Oh, this is something that comes through life experience, and just as with any skill, enough experience in the world of living, you're going to grow to some degree. For those people that have parents or an environment that does focus on this, you'll see much higher levels of it, and it is a skill that gets developed. We are innately wired to be in the caveman brain, which is our limbic brain, and that's the lower left and lower right. So we are wired to flee from threats, whether or not they are real or perceived. And that's our very first nature, is to get comfortable as quickly as we possibly can. So when we developed our upper brain, that more complex brain of the upper right and the upper left, that's when we started being able to step back and problem solve much more complex situations. So when you stop and use those areas of your brain, that's when emotional intelligence can really start to be developed. So to answer your question, no, you're not born with it, but it only develops over time, and it develops with experience, and then it really skyrockets with intention.
Okay, yeah, when you're trying to improve it and get somebody like you to teach you how to improve it. Now, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so you say that this test helps people to see where they are and who they are. What is the first area that you go over and work with them in their emotional intelligence?
So when it comes to this particular assessment, and I'll continue to help people know you can't fail it. So that's why we call it an assessment. It's going to do one of, it's going to give you a couple of looks. The first area we focus on is helping people understand that in each of the four areas of your brain, the scientists behind this assessment showed that there is an actual energy that gets created. In other words, the synapses fires, and if we hook you up to a scanner, you can actually see the energy being created in one of the four areas of the brain that is where your home base is. So one of the points of discussion I try to find with people is, where is home? Where's the area that lights you up, lights you on fire, gives you butterflies and energy? What I find with many, many people is just because that's the area that lights them up, they may not necessarily have developed the skills of being in that area of the brain. Now, let's take, for instance, somebody who was a natural born leader, just had tendencies to take authority, to get things done, to be very bold in their communication, but they grew up in a household where you needed to do what I tell you to do, you need to show that you're obedient, and you don't speak up unless you are told to speak. Well, if you grow up in an environment long enough, then you start to act in a way where, gosh, for all these years, I've been quiet. I haven't been leading. I haven't been assertive. And when I'll take the assessment with them, the first thing I find out is, where have you learned? Where have you been conditioned to behave? And then where do I see the signs of where you come alive, even if you haven't developed that? And it starts this process of them becoming self-aware. And it's also one of the absolute distinguishing factors between this particular assessment and a Myers-Briggs and a DISC. Now, most people I talk to, they'll take a Myers-Briggs and a DISC and walk away and say, that's great. That's how I am at work, or, but I'm very different with my friends. And so they say, well, which one should I answer as? Well, the core, you can't fool it. It's a 92% validated assessment, meaning you can fool part one and part two, just have it say what you want it to say, or to give the boss what you want it to, what the boss to see, either to keep your job or to help you get that promotion. But part three, you can't fool. And so when I look at part one, two, and three, I'm seeing where those discrepancies are in who you think you are and how you act, what lights you on fire, and then how you've been conditioned, you know, what your habits are.
Right.
So that's the first part of that conversation is, let's take a look at your results, and let's start playing with where you have energy, and as opposed to where you've just got a whole lot of skill.
Yeah, so that kind of gives you a good overview. Well, what is the second area of the emotional intelligence?
So first of all is self-awareness. The second part is self-management. Once you have all of this information, you know, facilitators and coaches around the world have this famous one-liner, so what?
Yeah.
So I've got all this data. What do I do with it? And it has everything to do with choice. So when somebody says, wow, here's all this information, the second step is self-management. You have to first be aware, and then, only then, do you have options and choices. So we focus on, say for instance, I have somebody who is highly skilled, showing a lot of development in their lower left-hand brain, which is called the organizer. And that person is just living there so much that they aren't developing, let's say, their upper right-hand brain skills, which are just as useful, and say, okay, if you want to have more energy, if you want to have a different lifestyle, if you want to reach those people in your office that are more this entertainer style, you need to see what you need to let go of. Where do you need to back off of those conditioned behaviors? So we'll go in and we'll take a look at how they can actually stop overusing some of those skills. That self-management is, look at your options. What do you need to stop doing so that you can then start choosing some other options? So on the one hand, how do you stop the behavior? And then we take a look at skills and or activities or exercises that help them develop what they want to develop.
Yeah. Now, for instance, if one of these areas could be like if a person wants to be very successful, but they're micromanaging everything, is that one of the, that would fit in this category? You would just for as an example, because if you're really, really successful, you cannot micromanage everything. You've got to delegate and trust other people to handle things. So do you help them? Is this in the second area where you help them to kind of learn to develop more skills and to delegate and that kind of thing? Is that what you're talking about? Things like that?
Yeah, actually, I have a client right now who is a brand new partner with a law firm. And while this person has many, many, many accomplishments in life, this person hasn't been in this position before where this person is a managing partner, is now not just managing operations as the COO of the business side of it, but now this person is a leader of people. So being able to manage that the work gets done, but influence the people to do their best.
Yeah.
These are two very different skill sets. And this person has an overdeveloped lower left skill set.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to do is help this person create and listen for enthusiasm and generate an enthusiasm with the workforce. So in working with that person, delegation becomes big, because if you have an overdeveloped lower left-hand brain, the fear factor is that something's not going to be accurate, something's not going to be perfect, and there's a consequence that comes to that.
Seems like that people that micromanage tend to be perfectionist. And I know I'm kind of a perfectionist myself. I'm trying to get over that. But that's one thing I think we all have to learn, is it doesn't have to be perfect, even though we'd like it to be. But is that true? Because and I can see where this just leads into other things. If you're a perfectionist, and you may have seen something different. And, of course, we're just using this as an example. But a lot of times I think micromanagers are perfectionists. It just has to be done right, so they feel like they've got to do it.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is there's a different language or lexicon for what a micromanager looks like as a lower left brain person, as opposed to an over-controlling upper left brain person.
Okay.
So everybody is controlling, but the way that they're controlling. So let's take a lower right brain person. Micromanaging, what do they micromanage? They're not going to micromanage the details. They're going to micromanage perfection in terms of how they act in their relationships. They may micromanage the heck out of a relationship and not necessarily a system or a process.
Okay, yeah, so there's different
really
types.
Clear, yeah, so it's like German, French, Italian, and Latin. Everybody speaks a different language, right?
Yeah.
Controlling behavior is what's common among all four. How they go about controlling it. So let's take an entertainer, which is an upper right-hand brain person. They are going to control attention on themselves. That's their controlling mechanism. As opposed to their opposite, that organizer, they're going to control the heck out of details, 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 and accuracy.
Yeah, this really gets involved, doesn't it? It really gets involved.
It can, yeah. There's some there's commonalities among everything, but this is why I don't run people through a 12-step program, because every single person's makeup is unique to them. It's unique to their life experience, it's unique to their resume, and it's unique to where they are right now. So there are some common principles, but I work with people very individually to help them individually succeed in what they're trying to influence in their life.
Yeah, now it seems like also that if you have good emotional intelligence, does this help you to get and stay in what we call the zone, where you can really be more effective in what you're doing?
Absolutely. Yes, you have a lot less wind resistance. Now, let me be clear. When I'm working with people who are first-time self-development adventurers, let's call them, these are people who haven't had counseling in their life, they haven't really been through leadership programs before, and this is their very first time going down the self-discovery route. Those individuals, when they're building this skill of self-reflection and self-awareness, it may take them a solid 6, 9, 12 months to get in the groove, to be self-aware, to then start seeing options, to then start choosing options, as opposed to somebody who I would call just a life learner. They're always a student, whether they were 12 years old or 82. They're just a learner. it's going to take those people, when they focus, less time because they're already hungry for it. They want to learn it. They are more reflective. So there may be just a few things for them to unpack and to break through those barriers. So it may take anywhere from 3 to 6 months for them to develop.
Okay.
So in working with people, people go at a different pace. It depends on where they are in being a self-learner.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, let's go over the third and fourth area pretty quickly here and kind of briefly tell us what those other two areas are.
Sure. So the fourth area unlocks, again, with emotional intelligence, first is self-awareness, second is self-management. And you cannot get to any other area unless you have the, again, self-awareness. So the third area is social awareness. It's kind of like once I buy that red Sierra truck, now when I'm out on the road, oh, now I see other people driving a red Sierra truck. So
right.
When I start to recognize the behaviors, I can then start to see those behaviors out in my social environment. I recognize them more. And that begins the step of empathy. The ability for me to put myself in another person's shoes and be able to create the possibility of what they might be experiencing. When I'm able to do that, I'm going to probably manage relationships differently. I'm probably not going to speak up first and then wish I wouldn't have later.
Uh-huh.
So that's that third area of social awareness.
Okay, and what about the fourth area?
So then we get to the fourth area, and this is the one I absolutely adore, and this is why I will always proclaim for any of you that are HR managers, any of you that are responsible for the development of your teams, people need to stop sending individuals to conflict resolution, to collaboration, to communication workshops, unless there's some element of emotional intelligence on the front end as the foundation. The reason for that is the fourth area being relationship management. Unless that person starts taking personal accountability in self-awareness and self-management, relationship management is missing that individual accountability, that individual ownership. So the fourth area is now I'm going to choose options for how to proceed with people. And again, it's a three step: stop, think, and choose. And that stop and think happens in the social awareness and self-management chooses now what's the best course of action for this person, this situation, this conflict. Oh, I need to collaborate. What are my options now? And that's the fourth area is relationship management.
Okay. Wow, that sounds like this is a very comprehensive program. And you work with people. Now, tell us how you work with people to help them develop these four areas of emotional intelligence. I mean, can they do this like online or over the phone, or do you have programs? Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. So my approach with individuals is that I always start with a core multi-awareness profile assessment, so that I can see where am I starting with this person right now. The great news about that assessment, in addition, is that there's always the ability for them to take updates. So every 30, 60, 90 days, they can actually go out and reassess where they are. And if they're consciously working on an area to develop, they're going to see a change in their score. What will never change is what lights them on fire. That home base isn't going to change. But we should see some skill development. I want to see what I call the Luke Skywalker traits. I want to see those increase, and I want to see the Darth Vader traits decrease. I want
right.
to see less of those Darth Vader traits. I don't want to see those develop.
Right.
So that there's that. So first, again, I always start with core, and then we start with, when somebody hires me for them personally, it's always, where do you want to develop? What is it you want to develop? So we come up with a game plan for what to develop. We look at where they need to back off, and that's where the coaching happens. It's, okay, what behaviors do you need to back off of, and which behaviors do you want to try on? What are you going to be trying next time? And we develop activities and plans for them to actually go forward in doing that. Now, coaching, it takes place either live with me or it takes place over the phone. I have customers all over the U.S. I've even had international clients before where I've been coaching. So coaching, believe it or not, there is a tremendous amount of information, tone of voice, pace, exclamations. There's so much communication that can happen over the phone that people stereotype could only happen live. I beg to differ. There's a lot of power that can be done over the phone as well as face-to-face.
Yeah.
So those are different options.
Yeah. And they can go to your site, destinationbreakthrough.com, to contact you and find out more information, right?
They certainly can. Like for the moment, they can also go to my LinkedIn page for Kathy Potts-Schisler. They can contact me through LinkedIn. They can contact me through Facebook. And this is the difference. When corporations are hiring me to do Core Map with their people, LinkedIn is a great site, calling me directly, emailing me directly. But when it's somebody who's going to their bank account and writing the check for me to work with them, those people usually actually contact me through Facebook. Believe it or not.
Oh, well, that's interesting. What would we do without social media? Well, you say that every business person needs emotional intelligence because technical skills alone just doesn't cut it anymore. And I can really more clear now what you mean by that. I think that's, I think this has been a very good, very good informative interview, and I appreciate it. So, folks, there you have it. If you want to climb higher on the success ladder in any area of life, no matter what you're doing, then you've got to have a healthy, as they call it, EQ or emotional intelligence. And, of course, for more information, you can contact Kathy through some social media, Facebook, and you can or LinkedIn. You can go to destinationbreakthrough.com, and she can help you increase your emotional intelligence. So, and as I said at the beginning, 90% of all high achievers, they take time to develop this. And also, let me ask you one more thing. Just roughly, how much time does it take? If they're working, someone's working with you, how much time should they set aside every week to work on their emotional, to work with your program and to do the emotional intelligence to increase it?
Sure. So I think because people are out there behaving in their world every day, they have an opportunity to start the day saying, what's my intention? What do I want to work on today? And then they have an opportunity before they, before their eyes shut on the bed at night to say, how did I do? So I think daily they have that opportunity to work on self-awareness again, which is step one. Then, depending on what they're working on, I think that they should make 3 solid attempts in a week to improve that behavior. And what happens when I'm working with people, I will have some clients where we'll work together on a weekly basis. But when I'm working with those people who are just very, very busy and wearing many, many roles in their life, about every other week is our schedule because enough time passes for them to have both failures, which is fantastic. Failures are sweet. I want them to fail forward as well as progress. And they'll have enough time in there to have the wins because they're out there trying it enough.
A lot of it is just practicing and working on things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Conscious, decided effort every day.
How long are your coaching sessions when you do meet with them?
Here's the difference. Now, people have this mindset when they go to, coaching is not counseling. It doesn't require a license. We're not going backwards and talking about issues that would require a licensed mental health counselor. Coaching is about working with people to have their aha's and their breakthroughs. So one of the things I tell my clients is we're going to schedule 2 hours. It may take less. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to tell somebody to, hey, hold on to that breakthrough that you're about to have until 2 weeks from now.
Right.
So I schedule 2 hours of time with my clients so that we can talk about what happened back in last week, what are you doing today, and what do you want to do tomorrow, and then dive deep into those stories. So again, we got to uncover those limiting stories that have those negative emotions attached to them so we can go ahead and reframe. When somebody has a feeling, help them acknowledge that I'm having a feeling, but let them take authority of what they want to do next. And that happens anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours.
Okay, so that's good. So it's where when you do meet with them, it's a thorough session and you really get a lot done. So
that is correct.
That's really good. Okay, well, thank you, Kathy. This has been, like I said, a very interesting interview, and I think it's going to be helpful to all of us. And thank you for listening. This is Beverly Butler with the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio. And, of course, we're on the America Out Loud Network. And be sure and download the America Out Loud iPhone app. And take care until next time.